Coming up on Tech News Today, PayPal fires back at Square, Samsung and Apple reenactments, and kickoff tech election coverage for 2012. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, August 22nd, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by RingCentral. We do everything in the cloud. That's why we love our cloud-based phone system by RingCentral. Zero startup costs, and RingCentral is $20 a month per user. Try it now with a 30-day risk-free trial and buy one desk phone and get a second phone free up to 20 phones. Call 800-543-9980 or visit ringcentral.com and use our promo code TWIT. And by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or Android smartphones from your home or office. Find out what your gadget is worth at gazelle.com. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Maya Zakhtar.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And this is the show where we keep you up to date on the most important stories in the tech world, starting every day with the top 10 stories in the news fuse. T-Mobile USA just decided to mean what it says when it says unlimited. Take that, Sprint. It's still playing fast and loose with 4G, though. Starting September 5th, subscribers can opt for the, quote, unlimited nationwide 4G data plan. It's an add-on that includes throttle and cap-free access to the HSPA Plus network, which in some areas goes up to 42 megabits per second. You'll not be able to use these new features with a hotspot, though. You'll have to go back to the old throttled unlimited for that.
Square and Starbucks and your little 7,000 U.S. store partnership, aren't you quaint? At least that's what PayPal and Discover think, because they're joining forces, increasing PayPal's U.S. merchant locations to more than 7 million. Starting in April, Discover's merchants will be able to begin accepting PayPal's charge cards, or consumers can enter their mobile phone number and PIN at the terminal. PayPal will give Discover a cut of each transaction for the right to run over Discover's network.
Closing arguments in the Apple versus Samsung case were made yesterday. Apple came out swinging, saying Samsung was able to benefit by not, quote, taking any of the risks because they were copying the world's most successful product. And damages in this case should be large because the infringement has been massive. Samsung's arguments undermined Apple's witnesses and said that if the jury goes with Apple, it could change the way competition works in this country. More on the seemingly never-ending story after the news feed.
Never-ending story.
It really is. Canon introduced new camera yesterday. Nikon introduced an Android camera today. The Coolpix S800C for $350. Comes with a 10x optical zoom lens, 16-megapixel BSI CMOS sensor, 1080p movie capture mode, and Android 2.3. That means it can tether with your phone and run photo sharing apps.
That's actually really cool.
That's kind of cool.
Yeah. TechCrunch says that a trusted source from Verizon has passed along some interesting information. The carrier is having an all-staff vacation blackout from Friday, September 21st through September 30th to accommodate the next iPhone's release. The yet unannounced iPhone is widely expected to be announced on September 12th, and some reports have pre-orders beginning the same day.
And none of that is official yet. Amazon is releasing the Kindle and opening up its Kindle store to India. The store will offer more than 1 million books, and their independent authors have access to the Kindle Direct Publishing Program. The Kindle will be available at retailer Chroma and Amazon's own sites.
I got an email today saying I could sell my book in India now.
That's billion kinda cool. People.
Yeah. Buy my book. The U.S. government, India, the U.S. government wants to prove it's not just doing the bidding of the RIAA and MPAA, so it sent a coalition of the willing to seize domain names of three websites charged with illegally distributing Android apps. The willing in this case were the FBI, the Justice Department, several U.S. attorneys' offices, and Dutch and French law enforcement officials. The three seized domain names, applenet.net, appbucket.net, and snapzmarket.com, will probably just show up under different names pretty soon.
LG you're the biggest, at least when it comes to ultra-definition TVs, because LG can now claim the biggest in the world. This TV sports an 84-inch screen, which is smaller than the 90-inch model made by Sharp, but has support for 4K, which is, of course, a more advanced picture format. The screen offers 8 million pixels per frame, four times the resolution of 1080p high-def displays. So you're wondering, how much money? This is going to be a great Christmas present because it's only 25 million won. Which is a lot less in the U.S. It's only $22,000, and my birthday's coming up, so I feel like between the
let's
two of you...
Let's pool our money together for Sarah.
The TV's looking a little small. I think you're right.
You know, that's why I work, for the one. Well, we have a Tesla museum. Hey, look at that. Matthew Inman of The Oatmeal, fresh off his fundraising success for charities, has raised the $850,000 Indiegogo goal he's set for the creation of a museum devoted to Nikola Tesla. Two sponsors pitched in $33,333 each to push things over the finish line. Nonprofit group named the Tesla Wardenclyffe Project had been trying for years to buy Wardenclyffe, the site of one of Tesla's old laboratories in Shoreham, Long Island.
While a number of countries have imposed sanctions on Syria, the country's telecommunications establishment is turning to China for bandwidth, as that country has not imposed any sanctions. According to internet monitoring firm Renesas, the majority of recent Syrian internet traffic is being routed through PCCW Global, a Hong Kong-based telecom. The Syria telecommunications establishment withdrew all 61 of its networks from the global routing table on August 18th and 19th.
Take a break. Thank our sponsor, Ring Central. When we built the studio here, we chose to do as much as we could through the cloud. We store documents up there. We hold meetings up there. And we didn't want a big old PBX system, POTS line and all that stuff taking up a lot of room in our basement. So when Russell, our IT guy, said we could get a cloud-based phone system through Ring Central, it was a no-brainer. We love Ring Central. Zero startup costs, no PBX hardware to install or maintain. And Ring Central allows us to easily customize all of our call handling. Our producers love getting their voicemail in their email. And you can even get all your fax messages right on our smartphones. RingCentral offers all-inclusive pricing as low as $20 per month per user. And you can start right now for free, 30 days risk-free, and a special offer for our listeners. When you buy one desk phone, you get a second phone free. And you can do that up to 20 times, up to 20 phones. So call this number, designated for our listeners, 800-543-9980. That's 800-543-9980. There's that one person who's like, wait, I still didn't get it. 800-543-9980. Or you can also just go to ringcentral.com and use promo code TWIT. That's ringcentral.com, promo code TWIT. We thank Ring Central for their support of Tech News Today. All right, let's discuss some of these stories today. And joining us for Digging In Deeper, Lon Seidman, co-founder of the Independent Media Network, writer for CTTechJunkie.com. I'll get it right. Oft-times member of This Week in Media, right?
That's right, and a new podcast called Behind the Video that I've been doing.
Excellent. Welcome, Lon. It's good to have you on the show, man.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start out with that PayPal deal you were talking about in the news for you, Sarah.
Yeah, so in April 2013, all of Discover's merchants, which if you compare to the amount that Visa or MasterCard have, Discover is the smaller of the three by a long shot, but they have about the same reach, 95% or so, of what Visa and MasterCard have independently, right? So the two of them together is kind of what Discover reaches. So it's the smaller one, but it still has the potential to reach a lot of folks. Merchants will begin to be accepting PayPal's charge cards. Now you might say, well, I don't think of PayPal that way at all.
I see those offers all the time. I never get a charge card from them.
Right. Although PayPal also has the new Square competitor dongle mm-hmm. that's being released at some point anyway. I've never actually seen one. Seen it on the internet though. Or you can choose to pay by entering your mobile phone number and a PIN at the terminal, which would then bring the funds out of your PayPal account. So you wouldn't need a wallet. So that's kind of cool. Merchants will also have access to other PayPal features. Consumers can order things online and then pick up the purchase later on in the store, that kind of thing. PayPal has 50 million users in the U.S. alone. So this deal, bringing PayPal to a variety of, I mean, millions of more in retail stores, makes a lot of sense. I mean, that's a place that people don't equate PayPal with now.
Right.
They've got a big user base, but for the most part, it's all online transactions. So, yeah, I mean, this makes sense. If you're like, I don't really want to change my habits at all, I'm either already a Discover member or certainly the places I'm going allow Discover, all of a sudden your PayPal account is unlocked at a lot of different places.
Yeah, I used PayPal as sort of a slush fund. Like, you know, I've got some things that pay me through PayPal, and it's not a lot, but then I use that money as kind of like, oh, it's off the books for my own budgeting.
It's my App Store money. So, when I've got like PayPal bucks, I'll be like, yeah, I'll buy, you know, iPhoto for 15 or whatever, because I've kind of got that.
So being able to go, I don't know if I like the idea of being able to go in and just pop in my phone number and a PIN. I mean, there's obvious security questions about that, first of all, because if somebody gets that PIN,
sure,
then
well,
you know.
Same. I feel like it's similar security questions to, like, well, you drop your card and someone looked at your PIN.
Yeah,
and
it's not like people use the security on credit cards all that often. Like, for the first time, it was when I was in Seattle, someone actually compared my signature to the back of my card,
mm-hmm.
which I found baffling. I mean, not baffling, but I'm like, wow, when's the last time that's actually happened? So I guess it's not much different than that.
Also, PayPal, you might think, well, it's the first time, right? PayPal has gone retail. PayPal's actually accepted in about 3,000 stores in the U.S. already, including some Home Depots, some Abercrombie & Fitch stores, a couple of banks, Jamba Juice locations. So they've already been experimenting with this. But again, the Discover partnership is just huge. I mean, this is not certain corporations. This is merchants that accept Discover across the board.
Lon, you use any of these kind of places? Would you use PayPal when you're out and about?
I want rewards. I want, like, you know, 5% cash back or something to use it. But I actually used a PayPal debit card for a long time. It was a MasterCard. So they had, you know, an existing retail relationship. And what was nice about it was I would get a percentage and a half back on every purchase back into my PayPal account at the end of the month, which was really convenient. And it would actually deduct, and I think it still works this way, it deducts from your bank account. So you can have like $2,000 outstanding at any given time and be able to use it that way. So I think this is more of a continuation of maybe their relationship with card companies, and maybe Discover gave them a better deal than MasterCard did. I do like the security function, because I still think it's absurd that in this day and age, you know, we have all this great quote unquote security online, but when I go out to eat, I'm still handing my credit card to a stranger who takes it away somewhere, and it's kind of
Yeah, for sure. I still find Pay with Square, what they used to call card case, mm-hmm. as the best experience.
Sure. The
right?
geofencing experience.
Yeah, because I when it works right, I don't even have to take my phone out of my pocket. I just walk in and they see me. They can tell it's me. I say it's me. They charge me. I know I got charged because I feel the alert and I get my coffee.
Well, and to anybody who says, well, you know, PayPal's firing back because Square and Starbucks partnered up last week, Don Kingsborough, who is the PayPal's VP of Retail Services, says, we've been working on this partnership for over a year, for 18 months. So it's not as if PayPal one day was like, oh, no, Square, they're making it all happen. Now we got to somebody call Discover quick. I mean,
all
this is something that's been in the works.
All these companies have been loading their guns for years. And
partnerships make more sense than PayPal trying to figure out, how do we replace something like Discover? Well, you partner up and then everybody wins and Discover gets a piece of every PayPal transaction, of course, because PayPal is able to piggyback on Discover's network. Yeah, it's exciting times for people who don't like wallets.
All right, let's get to the Apple-Samsung closing arguments. The way we're going to do this today, Sarah and I are going to give you summaries, quotes from the closing arguments of Apple and Samsung in dramatic reenactment fashion. And then Jason, Iaz, and Lon, I would like you guys to play the part of the jury.
Okay.
After listening to our closing arguments, tell us where you would fall on this case. Does that sound good?
Sounds sure. Plan.
I'm into it.
All right.
Good.
So this is after you've gotten your 109 pages of 84 items of jury instruction.
They're a calisthenics, which told us to.
Okay. You've got your 20-page form, and now Samsung and Apple will make their closing arguments. Apple will let you go first.
Historical documents are almost always where the truth lies. And if you want to find out what really happened, if you want to see the truth, make a chronology of it. The test is overall visual appearance, not these minor differences.
Look, Apple is attempting to block its most serious competitor from even playing the game. Competition is what built this country. The fact is, consumers make choices, not mistakes. There's no deception. There's no confusion, and Apple has no credible evidence of it. Just think about walking into a Best Buy store. You go into the TV section, all of the TVs look the same. They're all boxes. They're all flat screens. They're all minimalist designs.
They copied our product, but what they're saying to you is we don't want to pay. It took Apple 5 years to create this revolution, and Samsung took 3 months to copy it. That's the truth, and that's simple, clear, and undisputed. If you find Samsung infringed, you will have reaffirmed the American patent system.
Let's have Samsung compete freely in the marketplace instead of Apple trying to stop it in the courtroom.
All right. Who wants to take it?
We'll start with you, Ayaz, as a member
Apple
of the
rests.
Jury. Obviously, in a real jury, you don't go to each jury member individually. They just read the verdict.
They have to sit in a room and argue with each other on this. Oh, boy. I mean, this stuff's all compelling and all, but I mean, the evidence of the case has been, what, how long we've been doing this case? Like weeks and weeks and weeks?
A couple weeks. Four weeks. About that.
I think I'm siding with Apple on this one, just flat out, because TVs are TVs, and these phones aren't phones. I mean, phones are totally different than televisions, just because they're boxes. That's a really weak argument, I think. So
you're siding with Apple because Samsung made a weak argument?
I think they did all throughout the entire case, but... because I was in the jury.
Well, isn't that kind of how it works?
Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Lon, says Apple. Lon, what do you think?
I'm going to give you a wishy-washy answer because as a tech writer, this has been gold, and I want it to go on forever. So I'm going to be hung juror.
You're like, hung jury.
I've been reading these court documents like a novel just to get an inside look, not so much at Samsung, but at what Apple's been up to, because they've been this superhuman company that's done all this cool stuff. And to see that, you know, a lot of these products started out, you know, like anything else would start, ugly and unwieldy, and have been refined over time. And it's been just fascinating to watch this thing. So it harkens back to the big Microsoft and Apple lawsuit over Windows, right? It's the same, you know, it's fighting over interface design and fighting over other stuff. But at the end of the day, it's hard to make a tablet look that much different, right? I mean, maybe the software is where it's at, but... I don't know. It's hard. I don't know enough about the patents here, but I just wanted to go on forever because I want to keep writing and reading about it.
Well, you know, it's a good point. Nilay Patel pointed out it's not about whether you think Samsung ripped off Apple or not. It's about whether the patents at issue in the case were infringed. And those are actually two different questions. Jason, what do you think?
Well, I think actually I kind of disagree with what you said, Ayaz, as far as the TV perspective is concerned. It's all technology, and I think a big part of Samsung's case has been that technology companies find a kind of inspiration and influence from each other all the time. Having said that, you go to the documents specifically that, you know, about these specific patents, like you just said, Tom, and there are some pretty interesting eyebrow-raising points, but I'm going to go ahead and side with Samsung on this, which means we are completely tied at this point.
Well,
we're a hung jury.
I think that's Judge Koh's nightmare scenario.
Yeah, totally.
Is a mistrial, hung jury. What happens if
there's a
hung jury? Do they have to retry?
I think they just do it again.
Oh, so man.
That'd be fun.
It really is. That really is her nightmare.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, don't forget, the jury could side one way or the other and then decide no damages. That's another
thing.
Sure.
That happened with Google and Oracle.
And the other thing is, juries don't even have to agree with all the evidence they get. That's the other thing. So, like, juries are free to make their own minds up when it comes to how ridiculous this is. And the thing is, if there's an absurd result in this case, let's say Samsung owes Apple $300 billion or something bizarre, something beyond what they're asking for, that's when there's supposed to be like legislative reaction. That's what's supposed to happen with this. There's supposed to be recourse. That was crazy. That's not supposed to happen that way. We got to change the laws.
Yeah.
So when this shakes out and it gets appealed and appealed and appealed, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to AT&T and their FaceTime decision. We mentioned this last week that AT&T said we will allow FaceTime calls to be made on iPhones over our data network unless you have an unlimited plan. If you're one of those grandfathered in with the unlimited plan, we're not going to allow you to use the data network for that because we're afraid you'll just go crazy and use all of the data in the world. Of course, a lot of people jumped to say that is a violation of net neutrality. You're blocking preferentially based on customer type. That is a violation of the FCC guidelines, clearly. And according to John Bergmeier, a senior staff attorney with Public Knowledge, they think AT&T's plan violates not only those internet rules, but specifically the one that bars carriers from blocking applications that compete with the provider's voice or video telephony services, right? FaceTime is an app that AT&T doesn't get any money directly from, and it competes with the ability to make calls or if AT&T provides some kind of video phone service. Now, AT&T Senior Vice President Bob Quinn argued back on a blog posting. He said the FCC provision is meant to prevent downloading and using an app, but FaceTime's built into the OS, so it's different. What do we think of that? Lon, you and I were kind of chatting about this in the Google Doc before the show. Do you think that argument holds water?
You know, it's hard to say. I mean, there's this weird bifurcation in the blocking language and the FCC rule that puts mobile people, and I'd love to hear Ayaz on this as a lawyer, because I just write about this stuff. But the difference between how mobile people are treated versus the wireline utilities. And the big difference that I see is that for a wireline utility, they can't block a service, but it doesn't apply services to mobile broadband providers, which was odd to begin with there. And I also wonder if this has any impact on iMessage, because AT&T is probably losing a bundle on a high margin item for them, which is text messaging. I know when I'm about to send a text, if I don't see that iMessage thing pop up, I shoot that message out over Google Voice to avoid hitting my plan limit. So it's an interesting interpretation of the ruling of this net neutrality thing. I think this is the danger we ran into when mobile and wireline were suddenly treated differently by the FCC, and we're going to see a lot more of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, look on both sides of the arguments on this. The FCC open internet rules and AT&T's arguments, and they actually, it's a really gray area. They both have valid points. I was looking at Public Knowledge's interpretation of AT&T's response. AT&T is sticking to something about, they keep talking about transparency. And the reason why that is because these open internet rules don't say that they do say you can discriminate. That's the thing. You're allowed to do that.
Especially for wireless.
If it's reasonable, yeah. That's the thing. And because I was reading this, the rules all morning, because I was fascinated by this. It's explaining what a network management practice that's reasonable. If it's appropriate and tailored to achieving a legitimate network management purpose. And then they go on to explain what legitimate network management purposes include. This is not an exhaustive list. So the thing is, there's room for negotiations or debate. AT&T is going to say, okay, look, we're showing you that if FaceTime goes on our cellular network at this adoption rate, we'll lose all this money. It's going to interfere with our network. And that could be a legitimate purpose. Because if you're on AT&T...
Yeah, I mean, you're diminishing the experience for
everybody. Else. Right.
I think another argument that could be made in AT&T's favor, and I don't want it to be made because I have one of these grandfathered unlimited plans, but Dee wrote in and pointed out that I've had FaceTime over 3G for some time now via the My 3G app from the Cydia store on my jailbroken iPhone. This app tells any of the apps on the iPhone that they are using Wi-Fi, even if there is no Wi-Fi in the area. And you don't even have to have Wi-Fi turned on your iPhone. I wonder what happens if you use this when iOS 6 comes out, if it will be like tethering jailbroken apps that AT&T said would automatically charge your plan. And I think that the difference and the defense comes down to that. If Apple is doing this at the OS level, at AT&T's request, then I don't think this does impinge network neutrality because it's not happening on the network. AT&T is not using their network to block traffic. So if I can still use a jailbroken iPhone to make FaceTime calls, then I don't think this impinges on net neutrality at all. If, however, they say, oh, well, we're going to detect the traffic and then we're going to check your account and block you, then I think it's questionable and it falls into all those defenses that you're talking about, whether it's reasonable network management.
Well, yeah, that and the interpretation that this is a violation of the FCC open internet rules, that's pretty good, because when I was reading the rules, they are meant to be interpreted broadly. They said, look, this is not exhaustive. We know that there are going to be ways that people will try to circumvent this, and that is not the way we want this read. So the thing is, one of the provisions is, to the extent that that you could pay a fee to get around something, that's how people are looking at this. If you pay a little extra or switch your plan, you can get around being blocked. That's the question. Are you being blocked or are you being diverted? Like, this is kind of this strange difference here.
Well, and it's one thing to be blocked at the phone, at the device level. It's another thing to be blocked at the network level,
and
right?
It's this idea that these rules are meant to be interpreted broadly. So the fact that AT&T might be going, they're splitting hairs. Now, that might not fly in a court. It might not fly in the negotiations with the FCC. So that's the kind of thing where it's really gray. So this is an interesting argument from AT&T, but the other side's got just as valid an argument.
Yeah, I mean, if OS X decided to block a particular app from accessing the internet, it wouldn't be the ISP's fault, right? On the other hand, if the ISP was saying, oh, if we see that particular app coming over our network on off of OS X, then we're going to block it, then that is a net neutrality question. Anyway, that's the way I'm looking at this yet. And Lon, as to your point about text messaging, it is exactly the same thing, but it really feels like the carriers are moving away from pushing text messaging as a moneymaker. They realize that the writing's on the wall. All of these new mobile share plans from Verizon and AT&T give you unlimited text messaging. They're sort of throwing up the white flag there, I think.
Yeah, I think they're probably just giving up.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I'm a Google Hangout guy, and that seems to work no matter what I'm using or where. So hopefully that won't impinge my ability to talk to anybody.
That's kind of how I feel when we talk about this exhaustively, is like, and I never use FaceTime.
That's a really
Mom
good
never
point
uses
too.
FaceTime. I mean, I'm not saying that nobody
what
will.
What are they worried
this,
about?
And this doesn't impact you, because I'm sure there are a lot of people listening and watching and that it does impact. But yeah, I'd love to know how many people are going to be FaceTiming all day every day now or not, and really upset about it.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break. Thank our other sponsor for today's show, Gazelle. You want one of these newfangled iPhones with the FaceTime? You want to get a new iPad, new MacBook, new Android smartphone? You're looking at those Galaxy S3s or maybe the new Motorola Razr? You're going to have to pay for that upgrade. And now is a great time to sell your used smartphone. If you're thinking, you know what, I want to go prepaid, but I missed that subsidy, here's a way to make up the gap. Apple products get sold to Gazelle. Android products get sold to Gazelle. It is the simplest and easiest way, probably the fastest way, to get some cash to trade up. Here's what you do. Go to Gazelle.com, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Type in your gadget, type in the description, see what it's worth. Lock in that offer for 30 days. You don't have to send them the product right away if you're saying, well, I'm not going to get it for a couple weeks. Lock in that offer. Then you can mail it to them for free. They'll pay for the shipping, and you get paid fast by check, PayPal, or with an Amazon gift card, which actually gives you a little 5% bonus. You get paid quickly, and you get paid for your old stuff, so you got money for your new stuff. Find out what your gadget is worth. Take a minute. Go to gazelle.com to find out. Do it now, because the sooner you do, the more money your gadgets will be worth. Gadgets don't get more valuable over time. Sell your used iPhones, iPads, Macs, and other smartphones today at gazelle.com. We thank them for their support of Tech News Today. Nikon has a new camera. It's camera time. It seems like this always happens. Canon comes out with one. Nikon comes out with one the next day.
Day after.
Yeah.
You mentioned
yesterday was all about the Super Zoom.
Oh, that's right. It was Canon Super Zoom, but they weren't using Android on their device.
No. I'm just saying now it's Nikon's turn to say, we got something cool,
Nikon's
too.
Tom talked about in the news views, the Coolpix S800C. It's $350 coming out in September. Running Android 2.3, 1080p video capture, stereo sound. Hardware, it's got an OLED screen, touchscreen, 16-megapixel camera, 10x optical zoom, 4 gigabytes internal storage, and GPS for geotagging. And like you were saying, that it can tether to your phone. It can generate its own network, so you can take photos from your actual camera and put it to the phone. It's Wi-Fi only. It's not like there's a cellular antenna in there at all. And this isn't the first company to do this, by the way. Polaroid showed off a 16-megapixel camera running Android in January. So I think I saw some big releases saying, world's first. And it's like, no, it's not. It's like the first one, I think a lot of bloggers change it, the first one you want to buy.
Yeah, that's why
this is Nikon.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Nikon has not been exactly forthcoming with the idea. Are they going to... What kind of version of Android are they putting out there? Are they going to skin it? Are they going to use this for a lot of their point and shoots for the future? Or is this just a one-off? So nobody really knows what the future is for Nikon and Android. But the thing is, it seems like if you've used a point and shoot at all in the past, I don't know, 5 years, those interfaces are horrible. Like, they have these horrible menus. Even the touchscreens don't seem to make a lot of sense. It seems like Android has a second or third life in this ability to go, okay, you can customize it. We can make it work the same way on a point and shoot. But I'm kind of curious if anybody thinks that point and shoots could make a resurgence just because it operates more and more like a smartphone.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you that those menus are hideous. They're not the same. You know, if you're used to a Nikon little camera and you get a Canon, for example, which is actually something that I just did a couple years ago, it's like, all of the same features are there, but they're in totally different places, and that's annoying. It would be nice to have some sort of a standard, even if it was a skinned Android standard, a little bit more of a standard like, oh, a smartphone. I've had one of these before, and it pretty much works the same way. But then, I don't know, I guess then companies like Nikon and Canon and Fuji and all the others have to rely a lot more on why their hardware is better rather than the software if the software starts to begin to look the same.
It's funny. I saw somebody take a picture.
Which is not a bad thing.
I saw somebody take a picture with a point and shoot, and they're like, oh, well, let's see it. And I kept wondering, like, how are they going to share that? This is a very strange concept I had of, like, it's effectively that device is locked down by itself, and there's no share to Twitter or Facebook. Obviously, with Android, you could do that. And, of course, you could take the SD card out and do all kinds of things with the point and shoot. But it was this weird reaction I had when I saw it of this, how is it? It's just locked down. It's just on its own little machine. How do you get it out?
Well, remember, Kodak kind of pioneered the idea of, or at least popularized the idea of putting Wi-Fi into cameras, but it didn't work for them. It did not. It did not sell well, and they even had integration with things like some of those older photo sharing websites. You know, back in the mid-2000s, and it just never caught on. Is Android and more sophisticated sharing apps enough to make people say, "Well, no, I do need a snapshot camera in addition to my phone"?
You know what, Tom? I think one of the best things about integrating one of these operating systems into a camera may not be so much on the point-and-shoot world, but I can see a real utility for me and some of the things that I do on the SLR side of the equation, because as Sarah said and everyone said, the interfaces are terrible on these things. But also, we have a great opportunity occasionally to go shoot NASA rocket launches. So we did the last bunch of space shuttle flights and some other unmanned flights as well, and they actually let you put out cameras next to the launch pad a day before launch.
Oh,
and
wow.
You can spot, yeah, but we got to get all this hardware. We need sound triggers and timers and all these things that we have to plug into the camera to basically add that logic, right? To say, okay, it's the launch window time, start shooting. So it'd be great to just be able to program something ourselves, have it integrated, and then have it start shooting, because we've had a lot of our equipment fail out in the weather or alligators or whatever else comes by there. I'm hoping that this is a trend of things to come, because they really don't need the operating system anymore. There's a free one here from Google that they can attach to hardware and really allow us to customize it in a way we can't right now.
I think this kind of Android integration can be very addicting and can cause people to buy more and more cameras, because you can have different apps for the camera app that give you different functionality. So if you want full-on control and you want to be able to access everything and you know everything there is about taking a photo, you can have that control. But if you don't know very much, you can go to a simpler camera app. It's like, okay, do you want it brighter? Here's a slider. You don't need to know much to do that. And I'm like, wait a minute. I would probably be way more into these point and shoots if I had that ability. Because I do that with my iPad, which I know people think is strange to take photos on an iPad.
No, but you're that's
yeah,
I'm one of the weirdos.
I see it a lot.
Who does that? You know, I'm the guy who's holding up a sheet of paper size thing. But I like having a sophisticated camera app for certain things and a really simple one where I want to shoot rapid fire. So it's this kind of basically creating modes by having apps. So I'm kind of very curious. If this is full on Android, you could have lots of different camera apps and you can have it work differently depending on your use case.
Even though it seems like it's going backwards, I do like the idea of having the dedicated camera. I don't really ever carry around one now because, again, I do have so many photo apps on my phone. But that does bother me sometimes. You know, you get a phone call and you're in the middle of something and there's a lot of multitasking going on. Not true multitasking, at least on the iPhone. But yeah, it's the smarter the cameras become, as long as they stay light and you know, good megapixels, nice lenses and everything. I think this is fun.
I would hope that this camera has some sort of default camera mode when you first turn it on. I could see somebody picking up this camera that isn't like super aware of like an operating system being on their camera or whatever, and it pulls up just the generic Android launch.
No,
I you know what I mean. Hopefully, they have
you turn it on and it's just a camera.
Hopefully,
it's only
that's
that you,
the case.
You go into the apps to do the photo sharing at this point.
Yeah,
they should also market more cameras as alligator proof. I think that's a good point too. let's talk about this rumor going around that September 21st will be the new iPhone launch.
Yeah. So the latest rumor is we've all heard that the announcement is expected to happen on September 12th. Again, Apple has not announced anything, but enough people have put two and two together that we're almost talking about that as if it's fact, which it is not, at least at this point.
I've already ordered mine. Haven't I?
Really?
Haven't I?
Oh,
I feel like I have.
So TechCrunch says they've got a very trusted source who's an employee at Verizon who says all employees have gotten the word that no one can take vacation from September 21st through September 30th, which is assumed to be because everybody has to be, you know, all hands on deck to sell iPhones. Coincidentally, it happens to cover Yom Kippur, which is on September 26th.
Ooh,
so
that's not good.
You know, holiest day of the year for Jewish faith. Kind of suck if you worked at Verizon and you wanted to take the day off. Although maybe they
have exceptions. I wonder if they make an exception. Yeah.
For religious reasons. Just thought I'd point that out. You know, if there's if you're feeling at all skeptical, maybe you can say, aha, they wouldn't screw over them. So if the announcement on September 12th is right, it might be a little bit different. Okay, so we assume that whether it's at Moscone or maybe at the Apple headquarters, they're going to have an announcement. Some folks, I'm certainly hoping this is true, are expecting pre-orders to be allowed the same day for the first time ever, rather than, I think, a couple days later as it was last year. What's interesting, though, about the announcement itself is a fellow named Wayne Goodrich, who used to be an Apple employee, who is in charge of presentations. In fact, in charge of the presentations for the first iPhone, iPad, Siri. So, I mean, he really, he put together behind the scenes rollout for a lot of the stuff that, you know, got a lot of attention, is suing Apple in federal court for breach of contract.
Goodrich. That's who that guy was.
What do you mean?
We mentioned it in the news fuse yesterday.
Yeah,
I didn't put that together.
He is the presentation guy.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh. Now here's what's interesting about this. He's suing Apple for breach of contract, unfair business practices. He was fired back in December 2011. Now, he was the one who, while Steve Jobs was still the head honcho and the big presence at these Apple events and presentations, he says, I was his confidant, I was a sounding board, I was a close advisor, and I was assured job security by Steve Jobs, even if my position was eliminated. Now, Apple obviously doesn't see it that way. They said, hey, this is a business thing. It has nothing to do with you personally. It's just the way it goes. But if he was fired last year, back in December of 2011, he's probably not been involved in the presentation aspect of anything that we're going to see on September 12th, whether it's iPhone 5, whether it's iPad mini, whether it's both, or neither.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting.
It'd be a whole new presentation style?
Well, perhaps.
Could it be?
I mean, it doesn't mean that his presentation style can't be acted through without him. He's probably taken some notes.
PowerPoint instead of keynote,
exactly.
Right? That'd be the big shift.
Yeah.
Well, and it would make everyone in the press start talking about the new way that Tim Cook decided to present, right?
Exactly.
Because the Tim Cook presentations have always been in that same vein as all the Apple presentations. You know, it's not like he's doing a Steve Jobs imitation, but they felt similar, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder what. And again, let's just assume that Apple's like, we don't need this position. It's not personal. It's just, you know, a business expense. No matter what Mr. Jobs told this man, he's no longer with the company. They obviously don't think that they need him, at least in a really, really big announcement year that 2012 seems to be shaping up to be for Apple. So, yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, we might see elephants and kind of circus performers and a lot of music and upbeat.
It'll be a Samsung Cook presentation then. Okay. That's what is pretty interesting. I like that idea.
Because Samsung is...
If you watch the S3, did you watch the S3 introduction? Like the hour and a half? And there was like performers and... Oh,
wasn't
wow.
it Samsung that had the like Wolf Boy come out at CES a couple years back?
I don't think that was
too?
Them. I don't know.
Was that, or was, am I thinking of somebody else?
That might have been some other company, but yeah.
Okay, never mind. So Apple,
I don't think elephants.
Apple won't do anything circusy because they don't want to be seen as copying Samsung.
Exactly.
But maybe fire breathing.
Absolutely. I think you're right. 100%.
Lon, any best guesses?
I think the circus happens online for people waiting for these things.
Yeah. Circus is happening right now. You're right.
I mean, I think myself on one of those lines. Never again. I did get a granola bar from Apple. That was nice of them.
Oh, that's good. Do you still have it?
No, I was going to.
All right, let's finish up with the beginning, the premiere of our 2012 Tech Collection coverage.
Thanks to
Grant Garrison and Chris Lane for putting that together for us. That is really freaking awesome, but probably overpromised.
Yeah, I was like, that's too good for our show. We should. Oh, no, now I got to follow that up. Okay. So we're going to talk about tech that you could use for the election, the upcoming election. YouTube's relaunched its YouTube Elections Hub right now. It's a channel that aggregates the important political moments between now and November 6th, you know, Election Day. And there's going to be a lot of live streaming on this. It's going to carry live streams of the vice presidential and presidential debates, live speeches from the DNC in September and RNC later in the month. And they have partnered up, or YouTube has partnered up with ABC News, Al Jazeera English, BuzzFeed, New York Times, Univision, Wall Street Journal, and Larry King's new company, actually, for content. So there's going to be a lot of information that's going to be curated by YouTube and provided by its partners. And YouTube is working on setting up a bunch of Google Plus Hangouts chaired by political folks. So they've had some leaders in the past sit there, and they're going to broadcast that. Amazon, if you wanted to know how your fellow citizens are, I guess, leaning politically. Amazon came up with something called the Election Heat Map. Now, what this does, the map uses data from the top 250 books with clear political bias and is updated daily. So as of this recording, 44% of purchases were blue, 56% red.
So this is people who are buying books that either sway on one side or the other?
Yeah, so like if you look at the list on the blue side, I believe it's they have Howard Zinn's
People's History of the United States.
It's like the top book.
And then the Bill O'Reilly book is on the conservative side.
Or in fiction or something, I don't know. And then there's also this app. If you want to watch, you know, if you're sitting around at home, you're like, oh, these political ads. Who's behind all of this? You can check out this app called Super PAC app, and it works like Shazam. It uses audio recognition technology. It identifies the advertisements. Then it gives the user all kinds of information of what campaign or organization made it, how much it cost, how accurate the claims are. I haven't checked out the application myself, so I don't know how if it leans.
Who's the third party talking about how accurate they are?
That's the thing. Who's doing the fact checking? So it's definitely, you know, if you like tech and you want to pay attention to your election coverage, there's a lot of stuff right now.
I love election night. I always sit down. Usually I fire up something like CNN. But then I'll pop back and forth between the major networks and keep an eye on stuff. But the fact that there's going to be live coverage from various sources that are different on YouTube, that there'll be, you know, the usual apps and Twitter feeds and stuff going on. I wonder if maybe I'll just switch to online only. Watching this.
I feel like it's a lot of like that second screen type thing, right? I met 4 years ago, the presidential election, I was between jobs, so I actually got to sit home. I got really excited, woke up early, sat on my couch all day, and yeah, switched between the networks, just watching election coverage. That's all I did. This year, I feel like I will still do that. Well, we're probably going to be working, but I mean, for the most part, I'll spend as much time watching that as possible. But then you've got your other screens where you can be absorbing information and getting more information on, okay, that was a really tacky kind of a ad. Who was behind this? Because we already have both candidates saying, hey, that wasn't me. That was some other organization, and I didn't even endorse that ad type of thing. So that's helpful for me to figure out a little bit more of what's going on.
Lon, with this. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I used to work in politics in a part of my life. And still
Connecticut sign behind you. Is that from a convention floor?
Yeah, that was liberated from the 2008 convention. One of the things I hope happens, and this is in particular to the YouTube channel that they're launching, we do within our content network a lot of local political coverage. Some of it's journalistic down the middle. Others is commentary on the left and the right. And I'm hoping that, being that all politics is ultimately local, that they start to recognize some of the quality independent local content that's happening as well. Because in addition to these top tier races, a lot of activity happens on lower ballot items, especially, you know, state house and state senate and that kind of thing. So I'm hoping that they incorporate more of that. We've had a hard time getting through to YouTube. There's an Ars Technique article about our recent run in with them in Content ID. And I think it's really a benefit to the voters to be able to see that, because we've seen a lot of people go in and vote for president and never go further than that because they didn't know enough about the issues in that particular race. And I hope this might lend itself to providing more information to the public.
Yeah, and the more local the office, the more chance it is that the person you're voting for will actually have an impact on your life directly.
Right, you can call them.
I mean, you can make an appointment to meet with your U.S. House representative. No one ever does that. At least I don't think most people who complain about the government do that, but you can do that. I mean, you can have an effect. You can actually, you know, you're voting for your alderman or your city councilman. That's a person that you can lobby to change things in your neighborhood. It has a direct effect on your life. And people just don't think about it that way. They go for the president because that's the most powerful position.
When I was living in Vermont, like the elected officials were just always like walking around campus. You could just pull them over and have a conversation with them if you wanted. Very different thing, and they weren't politicians by trade. They were like farmers, and they were people that actually had an interest, and that was truly like, you know, that's your representative of your town. Like, it's still like that. If you pay attention, you can know your representatives.
All right, let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
Citizens of Ann Arbor, Michigan are going to have the chance to test out new auto industry technology, the largest field trial ever, to test the ability of cars to talk to one another and their surroundings to prevent accidents. They'll install wireless devices in 3,000 cars of people who drive regularly in northwest Ann Arbor. Wi-Fi access will connect buses, commercial trucks, traffic lights, and road signs to transmit and receive data 10 times a second about every participating vehicle's location, speed, and direction. All of this meant to try to keep them from running into each other.
So Ayaz and I are both, you know, I'm in the fast lane and you're in the lane just to the right of me. And if I was to maybe start drifting, not only with my car, maybe go like beep, 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 but your car would as well. Yeah. Like, crazy lady over here is drifting. Heads up, everybody.
Cat lady on the left.
I
slow
love
down.
That.
See, what I'm hoping also, though, it lets you like communicate a message to say, oops, I made a mistake. I think this could cut down on road rage a bit.
Oh, instead of the wave?
Well,
sorry.
Something like that. Because I've noticed that I've seen a lot of people get super angry at people who... You see this one guy who's staring at a GPS, and they're just kind of like...
Uh-huh.
Do you see that quick jerk?
Or texting.
Or something like that. And they're just obviously making a mistake. Mm-hmm. And they kind of like try to wave. And there's no universal sign to say, I'm sorry, really. It's like, yeah, you can wave. Thank you so much for letting me in.
Yeah, there's a universal sign for expressing your anger, but not the opposite.
Why not have one for...
There's a kind wave.
Thanks for letting me in wave. You're right. Yeah.
I apologize for that idiotic move. That was a mistake.
Well, then again,
sometimes you're like, sorry, I know. That was terrible.
And I think the cars can talk to
mocking.
Each other.
Yeah.
A little bit, yeah.
So let the cars talk to each other. Maybe they can work it out. And there won't be any social awkwardness. Because the cars will be like...
Can you send a please use your turn signal next time?
Or how about please turn it off?
You're
in the left lane.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you can't turn left.
When lights are flashed at you, is there a cop ahead? Is there an accident? What's going on?
Oh, that's just when they want you to get over. There's all sorts of opposite side.
Lon, you don't have these problems in Connecticut because people drive perfectly there. But
we are the perfect drivers of the country. That's correct.
But do you see a good use for this?
I do. And in fact, you know, we were talking before the show, too, about the fact that over 30,000 people a year in the United States alone die in car accidents. It's a staggering, staggering figure. And we all know, you know, unfortunately, people that have passed away in that manner. And anything that we can do to make this safer, I've been incredibly impressed. Not that I've seen one yet, but the Google car that drives itself is a tremendous potential for reducing deaths on the highway, especially if the cars each know what the other one is going to do. As we talked about, Tom, we're not very logical beings, and we're not designed to move as fast as these cars can take us. And I guess we're not cheetahs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, to have that ability to automate things and make them safer, and the fact that I could get out of my car and tell it to go park itself would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a classic case of everybody wants everyone else to have the self-driving cars, but everyone overestimates how good they are as a driver and thinks that they're not the problem. That's the only impediment to this sort of thing, right. That and technology.
Or the jailbroken car that drives too fast, right?
Right. The hacked cars. That's a whole other thing. Let's move on to the calendar, shall we?
We shall. HP has its earnings report later today. Tomorrow, AT&T is launching the mobile share data plans. Not controversial at all. The Google Nexus 7 will be available September 3rd in France. And TechCrunch has updated its article that a Saturn sales clerk told Android Next that the 16-gigabyte Nexus 7 will also be available September 3rd in Germany for €249.
Wait, Saturn's out of business.
The car company? That's what I was thinking, too.
No, it's not that same. Oh, it's a mobile store.
Oh, never mind.
And finally, Mozilla will end support of Firefox for OS 10 Leopard in October. They are thinking forward, and they want you to do the same.
All right, let's see what's incoming.
Onward. Incoming message.
Got an email from Tim who said he just listened to episode 568 and has a comment on our discussion of using tablets as content creation devices. He purchased Numbers and Pages shortly after they came out in the App Store and says, first time I tried to create a spreadsheet on my iPad, I quickly ran to my MacBook to make the spreadsheet. Recently, though, I had a situation where I needed to update a spreadsheet while I was working outside running heavy equipment. I created my spreadsheet on my MacBook Air, saved it to iCloud, and the following day, I was able to keep updating my spreadsheet on my iPhone while I was working. I'd stop the tractor for a short period of time, update the spreadsheet, and keep working. Took a little bit to figure out the tricks to the interface of Numbers on the iPhone, but it was very usable, and I was quite impressed with what I was able to do. While a laptop or a desktop is a better tool to create and update a lot of things, it is not only possible, but very usable to do things on tablets and smartphones when using a laptop isn't possible. Reminds me of the old saying about necessity being the mother of invention. Thought that was an interesting story about somebody who is like a lot of us saying, yeah, that's just not a really good use for that, and then finding that use kind of thrust upon them. No.
It happened to me.
Yeah. That happened to you too?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've found myself in a situation where I'm like, oh my gosh, I got to update this document. How am I going to do it? And I have done that. I've pulled up the pages, numbers on my iPhone and did an update. What I really want, though, as we all are, addicted to Google Docs, and that is my workflow. And unfortunately, even on the Android devices, it still doesn't work as well as it does on the desktop. And I would love for that to get caught up, because that would solve every one of life's problems for me right now.
100% agree. If anyone who works in that area of Google is listening, we are really supporting you updating that mobile version of Google Docs.
Please.
Even if they just do it on Android, just do it somewhere. Just make it good somewhere. Yeah,
exactly.
iOS would also be nice.
That would be nice.
No, just,
yes.
Just trying to sway them slightly.
Anywhere is fine. Just do it.
Progress.
That's it for this episode of Tech News Today. Thanks for submitting on our subreddit, technewstoday.reddit.com. That's the place where you can let us know what stories you'd like us to cover and vote on the submissions of everyone. There's getting close to 9,000 people in there. So go join them, technewstoday.reddit.com. Lon, thank you for joining us. Let folks know where they can find your work online.
They can find me at lonsybin.com and do a search on iTunes or Stitcher for Behind the Video. It's our new podcast.
That's lonsybin.com. And that's it for this episode of Tech News Today. You can find us on the web, twit.tv/TNT. You can email us, tnt@twit.tv, or give us a call, leave us a voicemail. Our phone number is 260-TNT-SHOW. We'll be back tomorrow with Patrick Beja as our guest. See you then.